In recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of Mayor's Bread has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Full report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabread.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horseville.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
About 20 minutes to the top of the hour, and Mike Welch joins us. And Mike, a very opportune time for you to step in as we just welcome back Jay Privman.
Yeah, no, it's great to see Jay's byline back in the paper, back online again, and knock on wood, everything seems to be going well for him. So good news all around there.
Well, other than some wet weather going well here at Saratoga, and we talked to you right before the meet started, let's get kind of a quarter-mile checkpoint, a quarter of the way plus into the meet. What kind of thoughts do you have?
You know, I mean, we're getting a lot of what we expected. The two-year-old races have been competitive and interesting, to say the least, and we got more of those to come. And to me, that's the highlight of the meet. I know we have all the big stakes, but from a Clocker Report standpoint, it's the two-year-old races I really look forward to on a daily basis, and plenty of that still to come as the guys keep pouring them out there in the morning. We've been interrupted many mornings here because of the weather, this morning included. Workout standpoint, the track very wet today, and then the turf works as scheduled today too, so we'll be loaded tomorrow. But again, like I said, that's the highlight for me. Interesting. Steve Asman started off well. Mike Maker has started off well. You got to play the hot hands here. Chad and Todd are up there in the standings, but I think right now it's been Mike Maker who's been the most surprising, the way he's come out of the box. So we'll watch him as we move forward, too. But, you know, Todd and Chad are going to be loaded the rest of the way, and especially in these two-year-old races.
We've also, of course, got two more rounds of the stakes, and you watch the early weeks, and the winners – you know, from the first, the most, let's say, flashy winners have kind of already been put aside and will wait for the spin away and the hopeful.
I guess, is the one horse that's probably distinguished himself more than any. That was quite a performance, and he's still a little on the green side, still needs to, you know, learn to get out of the gate a little better and get into the race a little bit more. But, you know, you can't say enough about what he's done in his first two starts, although the waters will get a lot deeper when he comes back again for the hopeful, no doubt.
Well, Echo Zulu is another one that we'll look forward to, you know, a return. And really, those two, with their 90 for Wit, 92 buyer for Echo Zulu, those two really sparkle. So
Echo Zulu was super. Wit will have the, if they wait with Echo Zulu for the hopeful, Wit will obviously have the experience advantage. And, you know, again, one-hit wonders are terrific, but you like to be able to see them do it again, and Wit has come back and done it two times so far, so a big sign for him. And, you know, that's a race. That's another race. That those two-year-old stakes at the end of the meet's big ones at the last weekend that you always look forward to.
Well, and there's been a nice, you know, nice variety of both the turf sprints, and they started, you know, starting to feed into those the two-year-old turf routes as well. And you know, those have been interesting, Mike. And there, I'm thinking back to last weekend, and I'm going to look, and because there was I want to say, was it a Clement?
Brendan Walsh. We had a Brendan Walsh race. I can't now remember if that was a two-year-old or a three-year-old that maiden that we liked a lot, and just got going a little bit too late, came up short
on
the work we had last time. But Clement seems to be, you know, every time I look up, I see Clement as another one that's been working well and running well. He's also up to a good start. He's got a lot of talent over there, too, to draw from. Today's first race, no exception there. He's got a New York bred in the first race. It's been doing well. So that'll be an interesting race. We're going to deal with a wet track here today, though. So, you know, hard to say on these young horses who haven't had a lot of experience in the morning with these wet tracks, how much that's going to affect their performances. So just another variable that we have to add to the mix.
Pizza Bianca, the Bobby Flay, was the one I was thinking of Clement's, at a nice price, 5-1, and there were two Clement's that had been working together, and it was a little tough to make a determination. I think there was that Expand the Map as well for, was, I think that was Chad, and that was a complex. I thought that was a complex group. That was last Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these two-year-old races, you know, it's tough sorting some of these out, because, you know, we've had a few races where, you know, we've had horses, more than one horse working well, and then you have to, you know, just kind of, you know, sometimes it's hard to compare. It's like apples and oranges. Well, which work was better? Well, it's hard to really say, and what's really going to separate them in the end is the trip and the break. And you know, unfortunately, a lot of these races for these horses that work well and you want to play, they're lost right out of the gate. It's tough to make up the ground here if you don't come away well, especially in the bigger fields, and you're faced with some traffic, too. We've seen a lot of, you know, horses' performances affected by that, too. So you always have to hold your breath in these two-year-old races. Well, any maiden race, any race, but especially these young horses when they come out of the gate.
Mike Welch with us, and we're going to get some opinions on Saturday's stakes. And actually, Mike, let's tie in the Curlin today with the Jim Dandy tomorrow, the high-profile three-year-old set. And First Captain is going in as a 7-5 favorite in here, but there's six of them that, with any improvement, feel like they're competitive. And how about a glance at today's Curlin before we talk about Jim Dandy tomorrow and Essential Quality off the Belmont win?
Yeah, there's no doubt First Captain, you know, has proven to be very talented in a short time. But it's going to get a real acid test here. This is going to be far and away the toughest field that he's faced. He proved answered the no Lasix question last time, which is another factor in these races that you really have to think about. It's hard to say sometimes how some of these horses are going to run. that have not been running without Lasix. They don't all perform quite the same, and it's really, there's really no way to tell, actually, from a handicapper's standpoint, and even a lot of times from a trainer's standpoint. They just got to hope that they handle that transition okay. But I'm not so sure what the track's going to be like by the time we get to this race. It was really, really wet this morning. The sun's shining. I think it's going to shine the rest of the day. How much they can squeeze this out by the ninth race. I'm sure Sugar wouldn't mind a sloppy track. His first captain's already proven over it. But there's some real talented horses in here. Snowhouse finished third, only got beat a couple of lengths by first captain last time in the Dwyer. And he's come back to work really well for Brad Cox. So I think he's one to keep an eye on for sure. Barron is going to be very interesting. Obviously a class check here, but he worked super over the track the other day. Honed that speed. It looks like he may be the one that they're going to have to catch if he comes away running. So he's one I think you have to look at. Collaborate is a horse Safi Joseph thought was going to be just any kind of three-year-old. He ran it back a little quick in the, you know, against big good horses in the Florida Derby. Yeah, really never had a chance to show his true ability. Again, a bad trip in the Raw. Came back and won last time, training well. This will be an acid test for him against this company. And the dynamic one for Todd, coming back off a poor effort in the Kentucky Derby, but he's been training well too. So, you know, this is a race I can't wait to watch, but I'm not going to play. I think it's just too wide open for me. And if you get a wet track in the mix, it's going to, and the no Lasix question, it's a tough one for handicappers to sort out.
You know, Dynamic One is going to end up being, let me see, the morning line was 4-1, and I'm going to guess that you'll get every bit of that, if not a couple of ticks above, because there does feel like some mojo horses and some, you know, some names and connections that are going to draw money. Not that Rapoli, Phipps, Viola, Pletcher, and Arad Ortiz don't.
Yeah, they made better few bucks there too. Just the connections might make them 4-1 on their own. But no, I agree with you there. He might sneak off a little higher. You know, he's one of the ones in this mix. Again, first captain, the one to beat. But and Jose obviously sticking with first captain, and brother Irad taking Jose's seat on Dynamic One here, who's will be looking for some pace help, and he might get it. Like I said, Barron, I'm going to guess he's going to try to get loose in here, but Collaborate's going to be close, and Harvard obviously has some speed. Snowhouse will be close up, so it'll be intriguing to see just how this one plays out and how the track is playing as it dries out today. I think that's something everybody needs to keep an eye on, because it's going to be a drying out track as the day goes on. So, you know, whether it's going to favor inside, outside, that, I think it's something we have to take a long look at too as the day progresses.
Considering how much grief the Curlin takes as an entity and the critique of it being a 3-year-old restricted race the day before a 3-year-old prep race, this is a terrific group.
This is a pretty good one. Can make an argument you don't need this race. You'd have a couple more of these in the Jim Dandy, but I think this race, the way it comes up, will be a good stepping stone for a few of these, and to come back in the Travers against the survivors of the Jim Dandy too. So we look forward to see how this one goes today, and then how that whole mix will work out in another month.
Mike, talk now. We'll see about 3:30, 4 o'clock or so today, the clocker report for Saturday. But in advance, let's stick with the 3-year-olds and essential quality coming in here. One, basically 50 cents on the dollar, 1-2, and the five of them that'll challenge, including the streaking Mask Parade, Wayburn weighs back in, Keep Me in Mind, and Risk Taking and Dr. Jack, both 15-1 for Pletcher and Brown.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's essential qualities race to lose. He's definitely the leader of the division here right now, coming off the win in the Belmont. He's trained well. I think we've talked about him before. He's not the most eye-catching workhorse in the world. His gallop out's usually just okay. You know, he lets his mate kind of stay with him coming around the turn. He doesn't put anybody away and post those real big numbers on the gallop outs. But, you know, he comes back and he runs his race every time. And, you know, he's looked every bit the same in his works here, if not even a teeny bit better, I think, than when I saw him before the Belmont. And I didn't see him before the Belmont in person, just tapes, but before I saw him before the Derby. So I expect he's going to run his race, and if he does, he's going to be tough to beat. But Mask Parade, an up-and-comer, big class check here, though, big difference in the groups he's meeting. Keep me in mind, from a workout standpoint, you bet him every time. I mean, this horse is a morning all-star, and he's continued to do that since he's gotten here, and maybe one of these days he's going to put it all together in the afternoon. You get a rider change here to Joel Rosario, who's, just been awesome in these kind of races in New York all year long, or just everywhere all year long. And Weyburn actually looked very, very good working in company here the other day for him, too, a big step up, meaning a horse like Essential Quality and maybe Masqua Parade. But I expect him to run well, too, and he's going to get Irad for the first time.
The Jim Dandy and a spot in between the Grade 1 Vanderbilt and the Grade 2 Bowling Green. Some Vanderbilt opinion.
Excellent race. Really came up a big race. Mischievous Alex, I think he's probably the one to beat, although I don't know if I take a short price. I think this is his game, 6 and 7. Even though he ran terrific in the Metropolitan Handicap. I didn't think he had trained as well going into the Met as he had in the Carter.
We talked about
this before. The Carter trained as well as any horse could possibly train. He did it in the Met, and Zappy kind of agreed and was kind of a little reticent. He wasn't sure what to expect out of him, and I think he was over the moon that he ran that well. But right now his goal is the Breeders' Cup Sprint with this horse. You may see him in a mile again late in the year, but the goal right now is the Breeders' Cup Sprint. He's trained well up here. I think on paper he's the one to beat. Whitmore, you know, he looks fine. He's doing well. He hasn't won this year, and I think even though he ran well in the Churchill Downs, first time without Lasix, I'm not so sure that the no Lasix isn't a bit of an issue, a bit of a concern for Ron Moquette, because he had to run him without Lasix that day and came back in a little bit of a short rest. He gave him a long time off to kind of recuperate from it. But the Lasix issue, especially if it's a warm, muggy day tomorrow, could be a factor with him. Three techniques, training awesome, always works well. Bit of a step up for him, but maybe if he gets the right pace scenario. The interesting horse to me is Special Reserve. Comes in off the two big buyers out in Pimlico and in Iowa. Like I said, Mike Maker is just doing awesome right now. If he comes away running from the outside, he may stand some catching in here. I mean, he's kind of a new face in the division, so he's got to answer the class question, but it wouldn't shock me. Ferenc Fire, you know, can't knock Ferenc Fire. I mean, he's done nothing wrong all year long. He's only 1 of 7, though, here at Saratoga, and kind of a curious July 17th work, 103 and 4 there. My Clocker partner was kind of scratching his head a little after that one. Lexingtonia is training terrific. I don't know where he fits with these. He ran super in the Churchill Downs, not so good in the Met. He was eased there, but he's come back and worked well. Again, gun to my head, I'm going to go 2992 in here to take a shot with Special Reserve and Mischievous Alex.
I like it. Bowling Green, you got a thought?
You know, these kind of races are not my favorite kind of races. It's all about trips. I'm just kind of looking over the works now. From what I see, nobody is like wowing anybody in the morning. From that kind of a standpoint, I think I'm going to say Breakpoint's going to run a lot better than he did first time out. I think he'll improve off that one race there. Cross Border never seems to run a bad race, but he hasn't won in a long, long time for Mike Maker. It'll be interesting to see how the pace plays out. Not a lot of pace in this field. Again, it might be something the Channel Maker is going to take advantage of today, as he has in the past with big efforts. When he gets on the lead, he's pretty tough. So I don't have a solid opinion in here. And the course by tomorrow afternoon. It's going to dry out, but I'm going to guess it's still going to have some give in it. We took 2 or 3 inches of rain here last night.
Yep. Crazy. Just when you thought it was going to stop, it came again.
And it came again this morning, too. I mean, we didn't get a lot, but the track was opened up this morning for workouts, and then it rained into it, so it got pretty wet. So we'll see where we're at post time. It's hard to guess. It's going to be somewhere south fast, I think, when the day starts. But hopefully by the time we get the curling, we'll have a fast track.
Finally, Mike, before I go, on Sunday, the Amsterdam, and you've had the opportunity to see Drain the Clock a couple of times in the mornings up here for Safi, coming back off the Woody Stevens win, and then, of course, Jackie's Warrior back at it. Now, he's been working out at the training track.
Yeah, I haven't seen him on the other side, and I haven't seen Donald's reports. Drain the Clock's been working about as good as he can be, maybe as good as he's ever been. So I think it's going to be great to see these two go back at it again. Obviously, Drain the Clock got the better of the trips the last time they met. So you might say, everything being equal, Jackie's Warrior is going to have a pretty good chance to avenge that setback. He was eligible to bounce a little bit off his previous race anyway last time at Belmont, but the slow start kind of compromised his efforts. So again, it's going to be a terrific race to watch. Maybe not so much to bet. You're going to have two short price favorites going at it. And if they go at it too much, you know, early on, it could set it up for one of the others. So I'm looking forward to watching the race. But from what I've seen of Drain the Clock, he couldn't be doing any better.
Hey, what about this River Dog from Maya Englehart? Has been kind of alternating from the main track and the Oklahoma.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen much of him over here. I can't remember. I'd have to go back in the book and see what
the notes.
He's doing.
That's cool. But
yeah. So, it'll be on the report.
Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch on your Twitter, and of course the Clocker Report on a daily basis, and you can buy for weeks, weekend, and still plenty of time to just go ahead and get the season. They'll be a half price or half season price probably when we get to the 20 day mark as well, but just such a resource, whether it's the 2-year-old olds or whether it's these high level stakes horses that Mike and Dave Grenig and Mike Vesey and Donald Harris have seen all season long. Mike,
yeah,
thanks
so
much. We
do have Mike Vesey is in and out of Belmont for us too.
Yeah.
So I mean it's something we've done the last 2 years now to try not to forget those horses that stayed behind last year. A lot more of them with the pandemic, obviously, but we've still seen some horses come up from there that have performed well here, so Mike's going to help us out down there through the end of the meet, and looks like he might be our guy during the fall meet this season at Belmont. We're working out those details now for the fall Belmont report.
Well, that is the Clocker's creed: no horse left behind.
Exactly.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Welch, everybody. We'll stay here. We've got, call it 55 minutes. And Nick Tamaro and Scully and Ernie Peary from Woodbine and Popo. So a lot of opinions. Don't put your pencils down. Keep them at hand. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. And, I don't know if you how busy you were earlier and if you were listening or not, but, you yesterday, you said if there's a horse that's going to beat the entries, it was that Rapid, now I'm going to forget the last name. Eight to one, though? 8-1? That was manna from heaven.
That was very surprising. Yeah, nice return, and the public just gets clued into an entry like that and doesn't really look for any other options, and it can be very, very lucrative. So that was one that worked out in our favor, and we'll hope there's plenty more down the road.
Well, you just got to be light on your feet, as it were, and be aware, and when you see that strike like Thunderball. Nick,
kind of pick five it kicked off. I mean, the pick five yesterday,
crazy.
The payoff was incredible. Yeah, it was
yep.
very
Yep.
Very, very lucrative for what ended up coming in, and you know that just goes to show you what you can do with one price horse and basically one favorite that's beaten, and that was a favorite that of course was relied upon pretty heavily in a lot of the multis. So no great surprise there that the return was very lucrative. And Foolish Ghost being 4-1 or so, and then everybody and their dog was talking about the Al Stahl horse in the last turf or dirt. So yeah, it was a good sequence.
Yeah, pick five for those that didn't hear it. $2,414. I mean, as it happens, I had to go to the clinic and get a tetanus shot, and which was amusing when they said, "When was your last tetanus shot?" And I said, "Oh, 49 years ago." I don't know my last tetanus shot, but they said it'll last for 10 years after I stepped on a rusty nail. And you know, in my entire drinking life, I never had a rusty nail. I can't even imagine what I'm going to guess. There's bourbon in a rusty nail, right? Is it sort of like a stupid Manhattan?
I think that's the case. I actually do not know. I'm not a particularly enterprising drinker. I can say two or three things when I even do, but this is worth. I mean, given that you have an action-packed hour with four different people coming on, we definitely need to be talking about rusty nail. Rusty nails are Drambuie and Scotch.
God bless anybody.
Glass on the rock for me.
God, Drambuie, which is basically arsenic. You might as well Drambuie. Ugh.
Yeah.
Holy cow!
That does not sound good. And even though they make it look good when you Google it and put it over a big ice cube, I just don't think it has that kind of appeal.
That's so great. Unbelievable. It takes so little to get me off mark. I do have another question before you run through the pick five tomorrow, the cross country. Your thoughts is listening on the internet, Nick. It sounded like there's a chance that they're going to host the NHC at your house.
Yeah, I think that's one of the possibilities that's left. I figure. The search is on in terms of finding a venue, because it obviously can't happen in Las Vegas with anybody having any kind of mitigating measures for the pandemic that's still going on. So, yeah, I find it amusing. I do. I was scoffed at by a few people after offering my opinion. I didn't even offer my opinion. I made a joke about the cold cut line 2 years ago, and you know, I had people on both sides, what are you okay with people wearing masks for? And the other people were like, wear a mask, if you don't, you're going to die, and it's just, yeah. I need to stick to horse racing tweets.
The subtlety is a lost art in 140 characters, or 240, whatever it is now. Nick, let's dive into this cross-country pick five, which is actually a lot of fun. And the Monmouth Oaks starts things out, and I've mentioned it, but I haven't talked specifics.
So, yeah, and I think I threw myself off because the cross-country pick five that's still listed on the website has Monmouth Race 9. But it's actually Monmouth Race 10. And the interesting thing is that the 9th is actually a good race, too. The Tail of the Cat, it's a turf route race. They have not updated this Saturday, July 31st, list of races that are being run. This looks like a very competitive running of this race, which has actually been pretty competitive year in and year out. And, you know, the interesting horse by far is Eeny, Meeny, Miney, Moe, stretching out in distance, 2-for-2, having been very impressive in a couple of sprint races. There's really no reason to believe she'll have any trouble going long. This is a horse that was taken for $400,000 at the Chase of Tipton sale right in the thick of the pandemic last year and has really delivered. Now, All Worthy is a horse who'd always trained well down at Gulfstream and finally put it all together at third, asking for Saffy Joseph Jr. So we'll see if she's now stakes ready, because the majority of these horses that have been in stakes races have really just been lagging behind a bunch of mid-type horses like Crazy Beautiful. Crazy Beautiful, I guess, is one of the better three-year-old fillies in the division. But I think it's really going to be a matter of who can step up. All Worthy felt to me like the right one, along with Eeny, Meeny, Miney, Moe, to get the sequence started and try and avoid maybe some of the shorter-priced, maybe, lesser interesting horses.
All right, and I'm going to reach out to Joe Longo to make sure that it is the 10th. Now that you say that, I want to.
Well, I believe it is. So on the website, it has the list of races for July 24th. So I just think they've not updated the website.
And it is the 10th.
It is the 10th. Okay.
All right. It is the Oaks. All right. So that.
Yeah, now that we have that out of the way.
Very good. All right. Now let's turn. Yeah, we'll do. Let's go through the three in New York, and then we'll slip in that interesting Woodbine race. But Vanderbilt, Jim Dandy, Bowling Green.
Yeah, always nice when you get a set of three stakes races. And obviously, one of the three is going to be an opportunity to be pretty narrow as far as the Jim Dandy goes. The Vanderbilt's a really interesting bunch, and you know, the good thing about this division is that you've really not seen anybody step forward with anything too tremendously impressive. And, you know, Firenze Fire is a horse that most of us have just been salivating, waiting for the opportunity to really bet against at a relatively short price. And it's nothing against Firenze Fire. It's just that he has found his way into some of the most advantageous trips you're ever going to find. I know the argument could be, well, he's a fast horse, so he does that. But as he's shown more speed this year as a six-year-old, he has just been in one slow-paced race after another. And I didn't think that he had things his way necessarily last time, but it was another slow-paced race. So, you know, I think this is a race that's going to unfold in an entirely different way, and that's going to definitely help his chances. You know, what do you do with Whitmore? That's one of the big questions, obviously. He's winless on the year, but he's run winning races on multiple occasions, including the pair of defeats to CZ Rocket. He hung a little bit in the Churchill Downs. He's a horse that wants to go six rather than seven. It's going to surprise nobody at all if he wins this race, but it just feels to me like a situation where you're probably supposed to be at least a little bit against him, looking for a more interesting opportunity. I'll tell you, you know, this race was a breakthrough performance for Majestic Perfection when he won it some years ago, and I'm a little concerned that Special Reserve might be that kind of a horse. He's gotten very, very good since he was claimed for $40,000 and comes in off consecutive wins. He's going to be ridden aggressively, and I don't know if he is capable of controlling this race from the outside. I think he really is, and I think that makes him very, very dangerous. I think it'll put Firenze Fire and Mischievous Alex to an extent on the chase, and both of those horses are better when they get that sort of free-flowing outside stalking trip. So I'm going to use Mischievous Alex and Special Reserve primarily as A's. I'm going to find a way to fold in a couple of backups, including Montauk Traffic, who's going to have to improve to win this race. But he's run two very solid races in a row. And if he gets any kind of pace in front of him, I think he could be really dangerous at a price, maybe more for a placing chance. But I think it's a good opportunity to try and be a little bit creative. You know, I'll admit, I think Lexingtonian is not without chance. He's going to be a very big price. Jack Sisterson is sort of making a career out of running these horses in big races and having them overperform. And he had no shot, really, in the Met Mile. And now shortens back up in distance. And if you think Whitmore has a shot, then you probably should be using Lexingtonian, too, because, I mean, they basically had heads up finish two back.
I agree. And it's the key. It's really one of the places in this sequence that you're going to have to be, you have to do what you need to do to get through. You mentioned essential quality, the 1-2, and here is where the alternate viewpoint and backup cleverness might come to pass. But boy, you got to get a little adventurous to, you know, to figure out a way that essential quality doesn't win.
Yeah, I mean, it feels to me like the easiest circumstance to envision on paper is that he gets wired. And the thing is, he has enough tactical speed to stay close. And the only horse in here that you think is really going to, you know, really slated to show speed is Weyburn. And Weyburn has a Rat Ortiz Jr. on. So, I mean, are they really looking for a run-and-gun type of strategy in a race where, you know, Irad is riding the main speed? So it feels like Saez will put essential quality pretty much wherever he wants. One thing about Brad Cox you really feel pretty confident in is that when he has a good horse, they continue to deliver each time, because he's one of those guys that is so careful about where he runs them. He's only running them when they're absolutely at their best. And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, a horse like Monomoy Girl was as good for as long as she was. Seems as if he's training pretty well, even though he's a horse that never really has trained all that great, but I think we can expect a big effort again. The only alternative I'm going to use is Weyburn. I think Weyburn is actually a very underrated horse. And I think he's got potential to be very nice. I'm not exactly sure what distance he wants, but I love the way he fought back in the Pegasus, the other Pegasus. And I think there's an argument to be made that he ran the best race in the Wood Memorial. So I'm going to use him for a little bit. This would just be a very sneaky Jimmy Durkin's kind of play. I will say that I've heard of a couple of people already kind of mention that Keep Me in Mind apparently has been training very well. And he's a horse that's going to be making a big late move. I don't know if the race will unfold properly for him. It's a little difficult to make up big ground at 9 furlongs at Saratoga, but he's a horse I think that's worthy of some consideration, because he's going to be he'll be a relatively decent price, and all things considered, he really hasn't run that poorly in his last couple of races. So the Bowling Green looks like a fun race. Channel Maker's coming back off a layoff. We haven't seen him since the Shima Classic, where he set the pace and tired. Very interesting, potentially, if he, ends up in the Sword Dancer and is potentially in the Sword Dancer against Tribhuvan, there could actually be a real pace in a 12-furlong race. There could be like a lunar eclipse that night to make sure that everything is happening that otherwise never happens. I find myself to be largely clueless in this race. I really don't know who I like. Channel Cat wants to be forwardly placed as well, and so that might really gas up the pace in here. Cross Border is at his best at Saratoga, but at the same time, I still am not really of the opinion that a 1 3/8 is exactly what Cross Border wants. I think he wants to go a little bit shorter. Rock Emperor has been one of the most disappointing horses that Chad Brown's ever trained, and he finally looked good last time. He was more forwardly placed. He was into the race. I don't know if that was something that Flavien Prat did. Obviously, he did it by design because it was a race with very little speed on paper. And it looked like it may have set off a light switch in Rock Emperor. I'm going to use him. I'm going to use Channel Maker. I'm going to use Moon Over Miami, who I've never really been a particularly big fan of, but he fits very well in this race. And just kind of hope that I stay alive using those horses, because it's not a race where I have a particularly strong opinion. And given that Essential Quality is basically a single, I think it's one you're just trying to get by.
Well, and it's funny, Mike Welch just minutes ago had kind of the same ambivalence and uncertainty about this too. So that's interesting. All right, so that sometimes can give everybody even a pulse take about a race being wide open. So FYI, let's add in this Woodbine race. And in fact, Ernie Perry is going to join us here next, and we'll see what Ernie has to say about the Woodbine action all weekend, because it's a big Sunday particularly, and not a bad Saturday either. I reach for Woodbine and I end up with a handful of Sunday stuff. Where is the Saturday? Here we go, in the back. The 7/8 allowance going as the 9th.
Right, on the turf, typical of these types of races, it would buy a big, bulky field, and about what you'd expect, mainly a lot of nice older horses. Queen Speed ran well off the layoff, got a big pace to run at, figures to take a step forward, second off the bench, I would say, and looks like a very logical entrant. There's probably not as much speed in here as there was in that last effort of hers. So you may want to be a little bit more cautious in terms of taking a lot of deep closers. This is a trip that generally does lend itself well to an off-the-pace type. And I would imagine that some are probably going to want to use Say Hey, second off the layoff as well. She got into some traffic trouble. I'd want to use mainly long shots in here. Scatter the Clouds was an impressive winner on debut, going 5/8 on the inner, but she got a big pace to run at that day and isn't necessarily a horse that's going to take a big step forward at second asking after showing some ability. So it's an interesting bunch. I would probably focus on Say Hey, Queen Speed, and use a little bit of Scatter the Clouds just to try and see if we can get by.
All right. Well, anything else that you looked ahead to for the weekend that caught your eye?
No, like a person who's fond of rusty nails, I'm taking it one day at a time, and I'll have plenty of thoughts along the way. I'll say, I mean, for those of you that are of this persuasion, the TQHA Sail Futurity tomorrow night at Sam Houston is going to be an outstanding race. There were like 5 really impressive qualifiers, and one of the jockey rode, I think, 3 of them and had to make a pick. So when you're looking at the Saratoga Sunday action and jonesing for a little nighttime punt or so, take a look at Sam Houston tomorrow night, because there's a couple of really good stakes. There's actually six stakes races tonight too, so plenty of opportunities to get your bets down, even on the races that are over in the blink of an eye.
And they're on their way.
And they're on their way.
So good. So good. Nick Tamara, everybody. And what are you doing? What'd you do in the curling today, out of curiosity?
I like Miles B. So, and I'm not dissuaded whatsoever by a wet track. Of course, we'll see exactly how wet it is by that time of day. I mean, I know last Sunday we started with a really wet track, and it was fast by the time they ran the ninth, and I think it's a similar situation today weather-wise. But, yeah, I like Miles D. I know First Captain's going to be a really big favorite in here, and I think he's well worth taking a swing against. So I picked it 1-5-4-7, and in my multis, I'm going to mainly just use Miles D and Barron and see if I can get by, because I think it's a good chance for you to really inject some value into that late pick five, which actually, you know, the card, I'm actually updating for scratches right now. The card's not that bad off the turf.
No.
There are a few races that'll end up being relatively interesting. I'll tell you one horse that I like a little bit earlier in the seventh race. The eighth race looks like it's going to be Clayton, the Lionheart's race to lose.
Yes.
The only MTO, and there's little to no dirt for him in here whatsoever. But Southern Passage is interesting to me in the seventh. I think he's going to get a big pace to run at. The only horse that was scratched was it was not the Joe Sharp horse, it was Liam's Fire. So both Joe Sharps are running, which means there's real speed in here. And I know I kind of am breaking my rule of taking a deep closer going a mile and an eighth at Saratoga, but this is far, it's a little darkened, and you might be able to get a decent price.
Well, and to Nick's point, we're waiting for Ernie Peary, the sequence now, the late pick five sequence, is 7 by 10 by 5 by 7 by 9. So a very acceptable set of fields in here. And as mentioned, Clayton the Lionheart looks like Phil Bauer. It could end up with a third win so far at the meet.
I'll tell you what, credit to Phil Bauer. He has brought nothing but live horses up to Saratoga over the last few years. He has, he has done very, very well. Young guy that trains primarily just for Ron Rigney. And, you see those red silks. I mean, obviously, there's always a big flash of money at the beginning of the wagering period, which, you know, there's going to be for that owner. But, and horses have delivered. I've noticed them. Probably could have picked up a third win on Sunday with Luna's in charge, but he got a little hip checked around the 16th pole, and that probably dissuaded him from going by. But, it's been a good run for Phil Bauer. And Clayton Lionheart obviously looks like a horse that's in a very good position.
Well, get your Bic 5 contest pick in. You are eligible, Nick. You're absolutely eligible.
I need that tractor. I need that riding lawnmower like nobody's business.
I love it. Nick Tamaro, everybody. And Tam, 1215. Thanks, buddy.
You bet. Absolutely. Have a great weekend. Thanks for having me.
Nick Tamaro. We're staying right here, right till the top of the hour, and after we get off the air, I'll put my pick five together for today. So it doesn't actually start until 3:55, so we got some time, and I wanted to let the scratch dust settle. It's a terrific weekend at Woodbine, including Sunday, where obviously the $500,000 Woodbine Oaks, the feature for the weekend, a very narrow group in the plate trial, but there's tons of action, and Ernie Peary back to join us to talk about the action in Etobicoke. Ernie, how's the meet gone for you?
Oh, it's going pretty good. You know, we started off late, but we're in full force. And like you said, the Oaks is here in the plate trial, stepping stone to the August 22nd plate. So it's going pretty good. We're finally getting open up, and we can have fans, and our food and restaurants are open. So everything's going great.
Well, certainly the entry box has been popular, and the cards have been very interesting and competitive, and no exception tomorrow and then into Sunday. How about a quick hit on a couple of spots tomorrow? We do have the baby stakes, the My Dear and the Victoria. Those came up a little narrow.
You know what, the My Dear, I'm actually looking at it right now. There's quite some quality in there. The Diabolic, the one horse for Cassie, and Lois Lynn. I'm going to lean towards a first-time starter. I'm really torn between Curlin Candy. This one is out of Karen. This is her first full millionaire. First time she stepped on the track, and You Should Be a Good One. And this is her first full. But there's also a horse, Guyful, I had on my Clocker Report first time out. And if you watch the race, the horse got left by about 5 to 8 lengths at the gate and made a nice rush on the outside and closed. He only finished fourth by a quarter. That one can be sneaky at a price. This one needs to break. But if this one breaks, and along with Curlin Candy, I'm really torn between the two. I like them both. So I'm gonna try to use those two for sure.
Interesting. And you mentioned Curlin Candy, the first-time starter, and Mike DiPaolo, certainly well-bred and got the respect in terms of the morning line, 4-1. Lois Len off the impressive debut win for Cassie and our friends the Greens and our friend Aaron Yagoda and partners. Lois Len 2-1. With husbands, and you're right, the nice enough group, actually, of the eight. Yeah. How about in the Victoria?
In the Victoria, there's obviously the one-timer from Larry Rivelli looks pretty tough. I haven't gotten to see that one on the racetrack. But, if that one gets in a speed duel with Feel the Beat, I feel that 24 Mamba's last race was a big reversal and closed nicely and galloped out strongly, so if you're looking to upset the favorite, 24 Mamba might be another option. So it would be down to those two for me, 24 Mamba and one-timer.
Well, we had Larry Rivelli to start the week off of his win at Arlington, and he talked unprovoked. He was chirping about one-timer. He thinks that this Trapshot Gelding is a really, really good horse.
Yeah,
he's excited.
He very well could be, obviously, by that debut. So, and he has a fantastic percentage at Woodbine when he ships up. So, he's going to be a very serious horse.
Before we talk about, I want to get your opinion in the ninth because it's part of the cross-country pick five. But before we do that, the Alley Wow goes off as the third early on the card. This is a six-pack, and you got some interesting locals in here. And then you've got Trombetta, who just seems to do nothing but send horses up to win at Woodbine, but Dirty Dangle in here for Cassie and Eclipse and Gary Barber. The Ullwellings with Kevin Attard have Hard Street, who broke through last time and might be any kind. Can't Buy Love is the Trombetta for Larry Johnson. Honey Pants 9-5. Clement chips in a horse that's been at Saratoga, a Cairo Prince that makes actually has made four starts on the year, but has had a couple of couple of allowance type efforts most recently. This is interesting. Josie Carroll on the rail with Mark Dodson's Lady War Machine, and Cassie for Tracy Farmer with a homebred La Liberté.
Yeah, so I like Can't Buy Love in this spot. I thought those last two works were spectacular, and finally broke through with a stake win. And I guess being Trombetta, and the horse has some backlash on the turf. Obviously, when Christophe Clement sends a horse here and coming off that nice win at Belmont, they're obviously ready. But I'm going to try to upset that one and hopefully get a bit better of a price on Can't Buy Love. I really like the last couple of moves of this one.
Off the Star Shoot win. Let's slip in this ninth before we talk about the big Sunday card. Ernie Perry with us from Woodbine and his Clocker Report at the Woodbine website. They added this ninth race, Ernie, to the cross-country pick five with the Monmouth Oaks and the three stakes at Saratoga, and it's a 10-pack going 7/8, and Nick just talked about it and thought that some of the prices deserve attention. Gray Seal to me looks serious at 7-2 for Josie Carroll. Not exactly a win type, but certainly looks competitive in this spot. Any insights in the ninth?
Yeah, I know Mia's at Midnight had been scheduled to run on the turf, and it was taken off the turf, so she scratched, and she found another spot here on the turf. That one might be something to consider off that winter form at Gulfstream. And another one, obviously, first time out, Scatter the Clouds, had run a big one first time out. So that's another one to consider. Earned a nice 75 buyer. And obviously, Grace Seal, you're right. Like you said, just doesn't win often, but always hangs around. And, you know, this is the second start of the year, so maybe you can put something together. But, Scatter the Clouds and Me at Midnight, I like this race.
I'm also going to mention, I'm just trying to get a feel for the pace scenario, and Super Munnings for Mrs. Weber, and actually a filly that was bred by our friend Ed Seltzer. Got to get the sense that from the rail, that's your pace, and then Grace Seal will stalk under Contreras. But Super Munnings might take him a long way on the front end, too.
Yeah, and, you know, Patrick rides pretty much all of the Live Oak horses here, and he's got a fantastic record. I pay attention to any time he is on one for Live Oak, for Cassie, specifically Live Oak. He rides them, and, he can send this one. This one finished, last year in the Woodbine Care to Dirty Dangle, and that one's in earlier today, so... Pace-wise, you're right. That could be the real speed of the race.
Let's turn to Sunday, and the play trial goes early with just a four-pack, and that a little bit surprising, but I suppose that some of the Ontario heritage runners from North America are just simply going to wait for the plate itself.
Yeah, there was a couple that worked really, really well on the Wednesday, and obviously Wednesday's too short to get them back to come on Sunday, but I think we'll have a big field for the plate, and there's still a lot more. Obviously, Weyburn is running, I believe, this weekend.
Yep, tomorrow.
Portola, or is it Monmouth? Or yeah,
no, he's running. Saratoga. He's Saratoga, absolutely.
I doubt that horse will come here. I think that's a pretty nice horse, and if he does well there, obviously, he's going to stay in that direction, right? But
Travers.
Yeah. We took a small field here, but it's the prep, and we'll see what happens, and hopefully the plate should get up there.
H.C. Holiday, Kevin Attard for Ivan Delos, and I suppose that's a homebred of his, and then Avoman for Donald McRae looks competitive in here, and the other two Attard with Truffle King, a Giant Gizmo, and a Frack Daddy gelding Dursky for Carlos Grant, whose name I'm not familiar with.
They have a decent outfit. He's got one nice two other land stakes type horse, Escomenson. You can definitely get one ready. So it's a compact field. I've watched all the works, and I can tell you this, they are all coming in off some fantastic works. Avoman in 59-4, out in 11-4, stopped the horse and closed, and Truffle King also. So they're all coming in fine shape. It's going to be a jock's race, this one, because, to be honest, any one of them can win this race.
The Grade 3 Vigil, the 6 furlong standard, and here is Super Stonehenge facing off against Pink Lloyd, but hardly the only topics. I Green Light Go, good old Green Light Go, speaking of Weyburn and Jimmy Jerkins, and of course coming off of a run, a pretty successful run with Jerry Hollendorfer as well, up to Mike Doyle, who handles the Stronach horses, but Pink Lloyd looking to win this, Ernie, for what, the third or fourth time in a row?
Yeah, it's been a long time, and unfortunately, I think Father Time might be creeping up on him, and the Super Stonehenge turned the tables on him in the Jacques Cartier. Super Stonehenge is doing fantastic. Hey, I've tried to knock this horse before, and this horse just keeps winning, so. But we'll see what happens. I just think Super Stonehenge is the now horse right now.
I don't disagree. And Bob Tiller will do right by Pink Lloyd if it becomes a not that an 88 buyer beaten four lengths in the Jacques Cartier means that, you know, he's ready for aftercare. but he is nine. Let's talk about the Oaks, and it's a field of 10. A really good group, and I make half this field as eligible to win here.
Yeah. Lorena should be the favorite.
Yep.
Never run past 7 furlongs, so, you know, something to consider. Jaylee Marie does nothing but win, and I've loved that horse's first two starts, and just a tough horse. She keeps on winning. Curlin's Catch, I think, will appreciate the distance. That one trained really well the other day. I think they're really pointing to this race. So it depends how low a price you want to take on Lorena. Again, another one that just has done nothing wrong. I wasn't the biggest fan of The Last Word. Maybe Gibbs was trying to keep her attention because he was pushing a little on her. But, Money for Row coming out of a grade 3 Celine. Mm-hmm. So that one could be a juicy little price. And, you know, open company coming against really restricted horses, to be honest. So something you can look at as well.
I agree about Money for Row, and that's a filly we got familiar with via Brian Lynch, who also trains for the Roroma team. And one horse you hadn't mentioned is the maiden, the Violence Maiden, Emmeline. And this is a horse that is inching forward with every start, and with the added distance as well. I don't think Emmeline is impossible and is obviously going to come in here as a price. I mean, just got beat a neck in a maiden race to that Miss Marie that Breida Hayes runs, the Carpe Diem filly. I thought that Emmeline looked like she deserved at least an exotic consideration.
Yeah, and what's even more impressive, finished second to Our Flash Drive, who won the Celine.
Yeah.
And she's quite a nice horse. So, yeah, the barn, and you can tell by when it, as a two-year-old, ran in the Princess Elizabeth and finished third there. So, yeah, the horses, and that work was actually quite nice, the 48-3. One of the clockers had turned to me and said, you know, that was quite a nice work for this horse. So, yeah, there's several in here that can win it. So that's why it's a great race, 10 horses. You know, you might throw two out, and that's about it.
Turn to the Grade 2 Royal North, and a lot of familiar horses in here. And I just came from Colonial on Monday, where Michelle Lovell she's going to have to regroup one of her handful now of stake runners. But she sends Change of Control up here for the Royal North, Amalfi Coast, the 5-year-old mare that, you know, certainly is more than credible. You've got all kinds of interesting runners that turned up in here. I thought this was an interesting group. George Weaver ships in from Saratoga as well with Lead Guitar for the Hills. McKnight, Genie's Beep Beep. There's a lot of possibilities in the Grade 2 Royal North.
Yeah, the two shippers obviously look very, very tough on paper. As for the locals, I'm going to stick with Genie B. Worked in 59-4, actually outworked Lady Grace, which Lady Grace won this race last year. So, you can't knock her either. She went to Churchill. She ran in the New Arctic against the boys here. Last two starts, now hasn't run since April. Like I said, Genie B did outwork this one, so I'll lean to Genie B's way for being the speed in the race. And maybe Genie B can carry them a long way. But obviously, Change of Control, Lead Guitar look very, very tough.
A very nice weekend. I haven't even touched on the maiden races Saturday and Sunday, but Ernie, so much stake action and high-level stakes action at Woodbine this weekend, one of the big weekends at the Big Oval, and yep. I appreciate the visit.
Yes, thanks for having me, and hopefully maybe we'll chat before the plate.
Absolutely.
We'll see our biggest weekend. And hopefully we can chat then.
You got it. Ernie Peary, everybody, and Ernie's clocking report on the Woodbine website. We'll stay right here. We've got 20 minutes to fill out. We're going to talk to James Scully and to Papa Morales and get some more opinions. It's been Opinion Fest on this Twin Spires weekend preview at the races. And a reminder to get to the website, stevebick.com, enter the Bick 5, and a chance to win an X330 John Deere riding mower. James, do you do the mowing or does Gigi?
No, we actually have somebody that mows it for us. But if I got that riding mower, boy, you know, I'm heading to the website right after we finish to register for the Bick 5.
It's a life changer.
Sounds like it.
I love it. All right, James, let's dive in. In fact, before we, there was one, you had one last week that I'm going to draw a blank now on who it was. You had a nice price winner last week.
Yeah, that Pathetique. She got bet down. She was 15-1 on the morning line. Got bet down to 5-1, but really just took it to him. That Phil Bauer went back-to-back races last week.
Yes.
He brought some nice horses up to the spa.
Exactly. I just brought that up actually with Nick Tamaro because it looks like he's got that main track only winner today, the 11 and the 8th, Clayton the Lionheart at a short number. Let's dive right in and get some thoughts on the weekend cards.
All right. Well, I'll start at Saratoga on tomorrow. I'll just start off with a horse I like at a little bit of a price on the before the stakes action. Race number 5 is a 6-furlong allowance, entry level allowance for New York bred. Not much pace in this race. Thought it came up a pretty soft field. I'm against the favorites in there. I like Chasing Kara, the 1A in there for Mitchell Freeman. This filly was multiple stakes placed last year, Steve. Came back this year. Broke her maiden in December. Came back this year. I thought she did not like take a step forward. Freeman gave her a little time off. I thought that was a good third, sprinting 2 starts back at 7 furlongs at Belmont Park. That last race was too far for her, but I think those turf races may move her up. I expect her to be forward in this race, potentially on the lead at the start with Dylan Davis, who already has 5 wins for 50 starts this meet. Pretty good for him early in the Saratoga meet. And I like Chasing Kara at 12-1 in race 5.
Nice. I saw Mitch yesterday, actually, for the first time so far at the meet, and he's actually got the entry. You also get Karamoka with Rodriguez in the irons. But yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Dylan because he's kind of caught a little bit of a wave here the last few cards. Nice. All right, let's dive into the stakes action.
Okay, and then the Vanderbilt. You know, the Vanderbilt's a race where I'm going to spread a little bit for multi-race bets. Obviously, respect Mischievous Alex. But I'll just say the two horses I'm definitely going to use are off-the-pace runners in here. Whitmore, I'm not a huge fan of him, but I do think that 7 furlongs is not his best game. He came up a little bit short last, despite his win in the 4-go in 2018. I think he's a little bit better at 6 furlongs. He shows a couple of, looks like good works at Saratoga in preparation. We'll have to run, sans Lasix, but he did it okay, I thought, last time in that Churchill Downs sprint. So I like Whitmore, and the other horse I like in there at a big price is Lexingtonian. One thing that intrigues me is getting the 6-furlong distance with, I'm expecting a hot pace in this race in the Vanderbilt tomorrow, and that Lexingtonian won the Bing Crosby from off the pace from the rail last year, one of his best performances of his career. I thought the mile was too far for him, but I really liked his effort 2 starts back at Churchill Downs when he ran ahead 2nd to Flagstaff. I'm going to use Lexingtonian and Whitmore in multi-race bets.
Hmm. All right. Jim Dandy.
Jim Dandy, you know, essential quality is going to be tough to beat. I will say that Mass Parade, I'll be surprised if he doesn't at least run 2nd. I think he's the horse that really has a chance to beat him
if anybody, if he has an off day, seemingly, if he regresses a little bit off the Belmont. I do like the fact that, you know, he got a little bit of a freshening after that real sharp allowance win on Derby Day. I love how he gutted out that Ohio Derby a little bit last time. I think he'll keep advancing off that race for Al Stahl. Might be down the road when he can beat a horse like Essential Quality. But, you know, one thing I will say a little bit, and it's a little bit with Weyburn, and it's a little bit with Dynamic One, today in the Curlin, I'm still taking that Wood Memorial as a negative key race until some of those horses start coming back and winning races. I know Weyburn had a big chance, it looked like, in the Pegasus until Mandolin rallied back past him. But, you know, I'm going to try to stay away from that horse, those horses a little bit. And, you know, so that's sort of my take on the Jim Dandy, Steve.
Very good. What about the Bowling Green? Because so far this morning, the sense has been that this is a bit of a crapshoot.
You know, I'm really very keen on the Bowling Green. I like this race the best of the three stakes from a betting perspective. I really like the freshening, and I like the outside draw for Moon Over Miami. I've been following this horse closely, Steve, since he switched the turf last year. You know, he broke through in that Dueling Grounds Derby at a mile and 9/16, so this longer distances hit him right through the between the eyes. But one thing about Moon Over Miami is I just think he's a late maturing four-year-old. He has shown a tendency to either be rank, to idle, basically running in spots at times, and he's also a horse that is not like being inside of horses at times as well in previous starts. I think that, you know, he's the type that's just going to continue to improve with experience. I thought his last two races, he was a little bit unlucky to not win both of them. And I think that he's going to run a big race tomorrow for Bill Mott. I like I said, I like seeing him drawn in post seven. If he can get a little bit tipped out by the top of the stretch, I think he's going to run past them. And I'm going to make a big stand on Moon Over Miami in the Bowling Green.
My first pass this morning, when I just wanted to get a handle, I've got the heavier work to do later today and overnight. But on my first pass, I thought, you know what, that race two back especially runs back to that and Moon Over Miami a fit. Always happy for Jane Lyon to do well and Summer Wynn. So, yeah. 7-2, second choice, and it'll be interesting to see what happens on this board, actually, because the two Chads that are 6-1 and 10-1, cross-border, you know, Maker demands respect in these always, and then there's the channels, Channel Cat and Channel Maker. I mean, this is really fun, and Pletcher, you know, Shamrocket isn't a doorknob.
No, and Breakpoint, you know, that you said the Chaz, but that Breakpoint to me, no way he's going to be 10-1. It's going to be interesting to see how the betting shakes up in this board. You got a lot of horses that are like, you know, 5-1 or 6-1 or less. And even Breakpoint, I think he's going to get bet down his second U.S. start for Chad Brown. So that's the kind of race where I think Moon Over Miami 7-2, I think I can get every bit of that price. I got a couple of plays at Ellis.
Great. Go at it.
All right, in race number six tomorrow at Ellis, it's a 6-furlong allowance optional claimer. Only a 6-horse field, but Mo's Mojo is the 5-1 fourth choice on the morning line. He ran well against a nice allowance field last summer at Ellis Park. I think that, you know, he's coming back off of a freshening in that start for Randy Morris. I really think he has a chance to show good speed here, perhaps even get on the lead with Joe Talmo, and I just think he's going to run a big race. I think this is a real suspect group. The short price horses are all potentially vulnerable in here, Colinator, Frolic Moore, and I like Mo's Mojo in race six at Ellis. And then race seven, another race where I think the morning line favorites are potentially vulnerable. This is a little bit of a pedigree play. Number 8, Quantum Leaf, is moving to the turf for Ian Wilkes. It's an entry-level allowance at a mile and a 16th. He's by Pioneer of the Nile. Pioneer of the Nile is 15% first-out turf winners. That's one of the best numbers of all North American sires. Quantum Leap is a half-brother to Superstition, who won the Daisy Cutter Stakes last week on the turf at Del Mar for Richard Mandela. All four of her wins have come on turf. He's been bred for the turf. He got caught up a little bit chasing the Triple Crown earlier. Last time out, he faced older horses for the first time. He got beat 3.5 lengths behind Major Fed and Motigali, who I think are both, like, that was a legitimately good race there. And I think he's eligible to really take to the turf. He's 10-1 on the morning line, Quantum Leap, the 8, and race 7 at Ellis.
Well, that's sweet. That race, 4:40 Eastern time, and the 7th at Ellis. Quantum Leap, very nice, 10-1. And Mojo, Randy Morrison, Talamo in the 6, so maybe even a little double action as well. I like it, James. How about a last-minute Friday push?
All right, my last-minute Friday push going to come at Saratoga today. Hold on. Gosh darn it. did I lose that pick already? Oh, yeah, here it is. Number 4, race 7, Top Gun Tommy. Kelly Breen, he's got 2 wins this meet, 21% win, second off the layoff. Going to show good, he's going to set a good trip just off the speed, second off the freshening, good second last out. 8-1 on the morning line with Jose Ortiz, Top Gun Tommy, number 4 in race 7.
Well, and Nick Tamaro on the 10, Southern Passage. So hook those two up, the 4-10 exact both ways in the 7th, the last second Friday push, LSFP with James underscore Scully 111. James, send me those plays, and I will get I forgot to get them out. You emailed them. You know what you do? Text them to me instead of emailing.
I will text them, Steve. You have a great weekend. Thank you.
You too. James Scully, everybody. And we pulled this off because we got a good 5-6 minutes to spend with Papo Morales. I was getting a little nervous. I thought, into hour 3, we were going to be hard-pressed. And then we got sidetracked by a rusty nail, literally and figuratively. Papo, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Papo, I ran out of time a little bit yesterday with Dick Powell, and I was kind of just touched on it a little bit. But, you know, we talked about those provisional bets, and a quick am wager. I wanted you to get an opportunity to explain, you know, that as a one of the interface opportunities and how that works. And also at some point, maybe next week, I want you to talk about the imputed odds opportunity as well that is afforded by the am wager customers.
Yeah, Steve, so did you want to talk about the conditional wagering today?
It's something that I think is really underutilized on everybody's interface.
Okay, yeah, so we have conditional wagering built into the wager pad, so you basically set the conditions minutes to post when you want the wager pad to start checking the odds, and you set the odds that you're willing to accept for your wager, and then the bet will go in based off the parameters that you set. So you don't, if you like a horse and you think you may float up to 3 or 1 or something, and you set that at 0 minutes to post, if those conditions meet, the bet will automatically go in. So you don't have to, you don't have to sit at your computer all day waiting for that particular race.
Very cool. I think we all get into such, habits and practices, no matter who we're using, and those features, unless you are made aware of them, you just don't, very rarely do you go probing along and say, well, what is this and how do I use it? So we should touch on this kind of thing more. And we'll talk next week. I want to talk the imputed odds topic, which, it deserves more and more attention, and which we're trying to get racetracks to include in their graphics package, which would be a huge help and would go a long way to assuaging the confusion and misconception about late odds changes. Invariably, they're just correcting to what is readily apparent in the will pays and the doubles and pick threes.
Yeah, and you can see it coming, Steve, by looking. I know Andy Serling references the double pool.
Yeah, all the time.
That's kind of how we have our true odds built in. We're pulling from the doubles pool and a little bit from the pick three. So we have the true odds actually lined up right next to the current odds. So you have an idea of where the horse is going to end up come post time.
Let's give some people an idea of how they might end up when they utilize form to win. And it's been, I laughingly, when I said that you were going to be on later, I laughingly said it's been a fun week for form to win users that were directed toward some crazy horses.
Yeah, and the one that a failed opportunity was I'll Handle the Cash. I believe that was Wednesday at Saratoga, who I actually keyed in second under Tama Hair and did not use on the flip, and absolutely should have because he was. I can't explain why he was ranked number one by form to win, but that's the way they had him ranked, just using the average form to win time. So kind of, you know, a good price in the sequence, which obviously spiked up the mutuals.
I you sent it to me after, and I watched the race with Paul Matisse and everybody over in at Amen Corner, and we were all just stunned. We're staring at the screen in frustration and disbelief. I mean, nobody had him, and it crushed all the pick fives, and it was a little harrowing. But that's one of the beauties of referencing the app and looking at what form to win, how the algorithm is seeing the, you know, and it's strictly a speed algorithm. I mean, there's no you don't have to dress it up. I mean, it's based on speed, and it's very, very amazing to me. I mean, I and sometimes to the point where I see horses, sometimes I go, I can't use this horse, or if I'm going to use it, it's going to be defensively. But there's a lot of players who are taking it as for face value and betting appropriately on that front. So you just gotta trust what the form to win is telling you. Turn to the weekend. And a couple of opinions, Papo.
Sure. I looked at Saratoga and Woodbine, Steve. So I guess race eight at Saratoga, the Vanderbilt. One thing using form to win you can do, you can look at when you're building in your analysis in the form filter. You can only look at data from a given set of time. So when I first ran the Vanderbilt through, I was looking at all horses, all starts between 6 and 6.5 furlongs. But then I was really keen on looking basically for the last 2 months, so I adjusted and only want to look at the races for the last 2 months, and the number one pick using form to win was Special Reserve for Maker, and he's just gotten good, Steve, lately.
Yeah.
And we'll see. I know Maker's hot this week. We'll see if that continues tomorrow, but he was ranked number one along with Mischievous Alex, and then my long shot play that I'm going to have to fit in somewhere on the multis is Three Technique for Jeremiah Engelhardt. I like the blinkers going on. I don't think he didn't have a great trip last time out. Really had nowhere to go in the G2 at Belmont, but it's 15-1. I'm gonna find a way to include him also.
All right, Woodbine.
Which one at Woodbine, Steve?
Whatever you looked at.
I looked at race 9, since that's part of that cross country pick 5, and it was ranked Grayfield, the number 2 horse, followed by Queen Speed, and then Super Munnings, who I know is coming off the layoff but may get loose out there on the lead. So those were the top three on form to win.
Nice. All right. Excellent.
And one last opinion, Steve, in the Bowling Green. I'm with James on Moon over Miami, but I am intrigued with the other Chad Brown horse. The Chilean horse coming in. I just
Breakpoint.
Yeah, it seems like a sneaky move for Chad coming off at the allowance race where, you know, he started finally running at the end, and I was able to catch some of those replays in Chile. And the horse doesn't have to come from that far out of it. He can sit a good trip. So at that price, I definitely prefer him over Rock Emperor, who I think does not like giving the ground. And I also think he's a little bit better with LASIK. So I'll take the other Chad.
The other Chad, always a good angle. Papo Morales, everybody. Papo Core 1 on your Twitter and formtowin.com. Go to the app store, download it. 2 free races a day. Plug it in, play with the settings, and we'll keep you advised. Then we'll keep giving you instructions, and A lot more fun things to come from Form to Win as well, including a whole refresh, actually, of the interface. Want to send you out into the weekend. Things have been gotten dry here, and I'll work on the Pick 5 right now and get it up to the website in a little bit. When you come to SteveBick.com, play the Pick 5. Good luck. We'll be tracking it tomorrow, and we'll keep you advised of progress. Thanks to Papo, to Ernie Peary, big weekend at Woodbine, Nick Tamaro, of course, in the Money Players podcast for Nick's analysis, Scully, Mike Welch of the Daily Racing Forum, the great return, Jay Privman, Ed DeRosa, Hammer, and Brett Jones. Thanks, everybody.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.